Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Ben Simmons wants out of Philly, but can his co-star, Joel Embiid, be the key to keeping him a 76er, at least for now? Only one goal for America's team. Are the Dallas Cowboys' Super Bowl hopes resting entirely on that man's shoulders? Right there, Dak Prescott. And the Patriots have moved on from Cam Newton. Has the former MVP played his last snap in the NFL? Good Thursday morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf, Chris Broussard, Nick Wright. Man, we had some wild weather that passed through New York last night. So many people cleaning up after flash floods. All of it. Kevin Wilds lost power, lost internet, lost his mind. He's hoping to join us shortly, but for now, he's not going to start the show with us, Nick.
Jenna, one silver lining, because my house flooded, basement flooded, total disaster here in Manhattan. But in the mail arrived yesterday. You recognize this, Jenna? The old Bible of the NFL season? Couldn't leave the house. Had to hunker down.
Ever.
Oh, yeah. That means it's football season, America. Football Outsiders Almanac in the mail. Highlighted 400 pages. Let's go. Let's go. Let's do it.
The first year we started this show, Broussard, Nick brought that book in. I thought he did it as a joke. I laughed for 3 minutes. Yeah. He wasn't joking. He reads it cover to cover.
Not joking.
That is his
annual
thing.
Tradition. Yeah.
All right. Hopefully we get Wilds back with us momentarily. We'll see where we are with that. We got to start, though, this morning in Green Bay, where Aaron Rodgers set to start what could be his last season as a Packer. But, hey, at least we're here. We weren't sure if Aaron Rodgers was going to be on the field at all this season with the rumors swirling about all summer about how unhappy he was. But after restructuring his deal at the end of July, it's been a quiet camp, and it's been a seemingly smooth lead-up to Game 1. Packers GM Brian Gutekunst now on his quarterback's involvement in that final roster construction.
Did Aaron Rodgers consult with you, or did you reach out and consult with Aaron about any of the moves you made yesterday?
You know, I've had really good conversations throughout camp with Aaron and Matt, and I think the communication has been really, really good. And so as we went into this kind of decision-making period, I think, everybody, all the people that are kind of involved in that were very aware of what was going on and why we were doing what we were doing. So I feel really good about that. And the conversations that I've had with Aaron have been excellent.
All right, Nick, I know we should appreciate that Aaron Rodgers is here and he's playing and we should just enjoy it, but is there any hope that Packers can still work things out with Aaron Rodgers beyond this season? Dare we look ahead?
Oh, how I've been waiting for this moment. Since the momentous day this Monday when Chris Broussard officially became a member of the show, I've been waiting for a chance to do this. It's over between the Packers and Aaron Rodgers after this season. There is no saving it. There is nothing anyone's going to be able to do.
Do it again.
I think official show predictions are coming out Monday, so I don't want to spoil anything. But as I'm, as I'm inserting the data and trying to figure out who's going to be where, I'm leaning towards the Packers being in the Super Bowl for the first time in a decade with Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback. But even that, I do not think, can salvage this relationship. Broussard, I've gone back at least once and rewatched that Aaron Rodgers press conference dissertation where he very clearly, calmly, and not concisely because it was rather long, but cogently laid out his reasons for why he was upset, what he thinks happened, and how the relationship has soured between he and the front office. None of that is going to change because Rodgers and the Packers are awesome this year, as I think they will be. And if they're terrible or mediocre or just pretty good, obviously that wouldn't change it. And Broussard, what I think has further damaged the Packers' chances of retaining Aaron Rodgers is what we've seen over the last few months. Reports from other teams, like, hey, Arizona, when it came to their offseason moves, they consulted Kyler Murray. He's been with the team 2 years. Philly talked about how they used to consult with Wentz. Brady, we know, gets to Tampa Bay. What do you want, Tom? Sean Payton talked about how Drew Brees was essentially a de facto member of the coaching staff. So Aaron got confirmation, not that he needed it, that what he wanted and wants is not out of the norm for great quarterbacks, or even in Kyler and Wentz's case, young, new quarterbacks, but guys spent a high draft pick on. So, no, I don't think the relationship is salvageable, even if they make the Super Bowl.
All right, Nick, before I address your point, let me address your Kenny Smith slash Chris Broussard imitation. It needs work. Yeah. All right. It needs work, buddy. Okay. All right. You said you're going to be hunkered down, locked in the house, reading that almanac. Yeah. Work on that imitation, too. So I give you a C minus. All right. I give you a C minus on that. You can raise that up. But
better than I would have
done. Nick, I couldn't disagree more. Now, I'm not saying he's definitely staying. You'd be crazy to say he's definitely staying in Green Bay for the long haul. But I also think Aaron Rodgers is in a tremendous situation, and he's smart enough to know it. And I get what you'll say. Wherever Aaron Rodgers goes, they're going to have a chance to win the Super Bowl, and I'm with you on that. Okay. But that said, he's with a historic organization. He's got, you know, obviously they need to re-sign Devontae Adams after this year. If that happens, he's got arguably the best wide receiver in the league. He's got one of the best running backs in the league, who just re-signed for a long-term deal. He's had one of the best offensive lines in the league recently. He's got a hot young coach who has led them to back-to-back NFC title games and 13-3 records. And he's got a top 10 defense. So I get that the relationship is jacked up, and that's what was bothering him. But I do think there's enough time to mend the fences, at least to the point where Rodgers could stay, because again, he's always said, Nick, I love it in Green Bay, and I hope to finish my career here. If this year goes well, I'm not talking even about on the field yet. I'm talking about in the relationship with Goody Coos. I call him Goody. He calls me Brew. We do that thing. So if Rodgers and Goody can get it together, and look, You mentioned a legendary press conference, right, with Rodgers. Rodgers unloaded on Goody. And what did Gutekunst do? He took it. He took it. And then the next day or two, whatever it was, he comes out and they sign Randall Cobb just because Aaron wanted him. And he admitted it. We did it because Aaron wanted it. Okay, that's why we did it. And so I think over this whole year, they got a whole year to mend the fences, to listen to Aaron, to hear his input, and make him feel like he's, you know, definitely being heard in this organization. And then when they offer him a long-term extension with no outs early for them, that he knows he can be there long-term, I think there's a good chance they could keep him.
Well, let me throw a little curveball into this, because I think there's the relationship souring and all of that, which we've talked about ad nauseum all summer. There's another element to this that I think is intriguing and interesting, particularly when it comes to two of the teams that, if Aaron Rodgers were to be traded, would be at the top of the list. The Broncos, we know. Why did the Broncos not draft a quarterback and now they didn't go with their young quarterback? They're going with Teddy. Well, maybe because they're trying to keep the door open for a Rodgers trade. And the Raiders, also, they were potentially in on Russell Wilson, potentially could be in on Aaron Rodgers. Those two teams are noteworthy to me because those two teams are in the AFC West. And I do wonder if Rodgers, when he's thinking about what the rest of his career, what he wants to look like, he knows there is no catching Brady in the GOAT conversation, in the ring conversation, in the winning conversation. Brady has quadruple lapped the field and all of that, and quintuple lapped Rodgers with the 10 Super Bowl appearances to one, 7 rings to one. But Rodgers, even when Brady had 4 rings, 5 rings, he still had his own corner that was separate from Tom's. And that corner was what? Most talented quarterback we've ever seen. Most gifted quarterback we've ever seen. Well, Broussard, and this isn't the Kansas Cityan in me saying this, he's being, if not already totally, elbowed off that corner, right? By Patrick Mahomes. Now those honorifics go to Mahomes. They've never played each other. We were, you know, one drive away from getting to see them play each other in the Super Bowl, and then didn't happen. This year, November 7th, I think it's the game of the year, happens to be on Fox in Arrowhead, Packers, Chiefs. Might be a Super Bowl preview, maybe should have been a Super Bowl, you know, do-over from what we could have gotten last year. I wonder if Rodgers, part of his motivation to get out of Green Bay, is to try to maybe be able to elbow Mahomes back off that corner. And what better way to do it? Denver has a lot of the things you mentioned Green Bay has. Denver doesn't have Davante Adams, but they have three really good receivers. They potentially have a really good defense. Like, could that be a part of the math of, I'm not catching Brady, let me try to go take back what Mahomes has taken from me?
Man, I mean, I think that's really deep. I mean, because here's the thing, Nick, he doesn't have to go to Mahomes' division to do that. He can do it in Green Bay.
But what better way?
And I'm with you on Mahomes. I'm with you on Mahomes taking that from Rodgers. But let's be honest, Rodgers went a long way in taking it back last year, right? I mean, if he plays again this year like he did last year, then I think now that becomes a new discussion where, well, maybe he is still more talented than Pat Mahomes. So I think that's that issue. Here's where I agree with you, Nick. I don't think winning the Super Bowl, if they were to do that, automatically means he would stay in Green Bay. Like, I don't think his staying there is necessarily related to how successful they are this season. If they have another good year, lose in the NFC title game or second round of the playoffs, whatever, I think there's a chance he still could stay and try to win and take care of the unfinished business. If he wins the Super Bowl, he could rightfully say, look, I delivered the fans of Green Bay another Super Bowl. I've one-upped Brett Favre. Got two. He's got one. And I'm leaving as a winner to go somewhere else and do it in another franchise. So I don't think a Super Bowl guarantees that he would stay. All I'm saying is this talk, I don't agree with the talk that he's definitely out of there, because I think there's too much time for good things to happen.
What about this? What if the Packers traded Jordan Love? Would that be enough to move the needle to maybe say, okay, they believe in me, I'm the guy, I'm going to be here? Do you think that, Nick, makes him stay?
Trading Jordan Love and giving him the long-term Rodgers extension with guaranteed money where it's not a fake extension, yeah, of course, those are the things that would have to happen. But I think right now, if they were going to trade Jordan Love, they'd have done it this offseason when Rodgers was contemplating retirement. The fact that they didn't do it this offseason, his trade value is only going to go down further the longer removed he is from when he was drafted, because they hope he doesn't play this year. So, yeah, I think that would go a long way, Jenna. I just don't see that in the cards for the Packers at this point. It'd be admitting defeat, and I don't think they want to do that.
Drawing a blank, Cowboys did some reshuffling in their quarterback room yesterday, releasing Garrett Gilbert and Ben DiNucci during final cuts. That leaves Cooper Rush as Dak Prescott's backup. Cowboys also adding former third-round pick Will Greer off waivers from Carolina. Not a whole lot of experience behind Dak. Not the plan B like they had last year at Andy Dalton. Hey, Chris Broussard. Nick just laughed. The Cowboys quarterback room is blank.
It is crying out for Cam Newton. Screaming for Cam Newton. I mean, you just showed it. Come on. The backups in Dallas now, Cooper Rush has attempted three passes in his three-year career. And Will Greer, the best thing about him is his hair. Four interceptions, no touchdowns in his two NFL starts last year. Come on. I mean, Dak is not injury prone. We know that. However, coming off the ankle injury, the shoulder, who knows if that'll flare up again. If Dak gets injured, their season right now is over. All they did in the offseason, all the defensive draft picks, right? The receivers they have, it is over. Over. All right?
That's correct.
And if they bring in Cam Newton, however, if Dak were to go down, you could salvage the season. I mean, it's realistic to think Cam could step in and you still could win that horrible division and make it to the playoffs and make something out of this season. And with Cam's celebrity and his stature, it won't be a problem in Dallas because Dak is clearly solidified as the starter, Nick. Right.
And we're going to talk more about Cam's future in a minute, so I'm going to assume they're not signing Cam for the sake of this discussion. Before I give my answer, I don't know if it's possible, can we put that full screen back up? Because that was a remarkable side-by-side of, oh, my God. I mean, my man Cooper Rush has thrown 3 passes for 2 yards. For the record, if you just spike the football every play, your quarterback rating is 39.8. So he is essentially just spiking it in his 3 attempts. Somehow, though, Will Greer's worse. Will Greer would have been better if he just spiked it every play because he subbed 39.8 passes. That's a disaster, which is why the Cowboys quarterback room is, wait for it, hanging by a subcapularis. You might say, Nick, what's a subcapularis? Ooh. And I'd say, well, I'll tell you because I looked it up this morning. It's the muscle right here, which is evidently the muscle Dak Prescott tweaked when he didn't warm up properly. If something happens to Dak and they got to miss a game and they have to miss a game, they're finished. Like, everything Broussard said is true. And you mentioned Cam. The Cowboys last week cleared up cap space by redoing Zeke's deal. I assumed it was because they had a trade for a legitimate backup quarterback in mind. And then Gardner Minshew, who doesn't even make any money, got traded, and it wasn't to Dallas. Why is Gardner Minshew not in Dallas right now? I don't understand that, and I think it is incredibly risky. It reminds me, Jenna, of the last year Romo was there before Dak. When Romo went down and Jerry Jones was like, oh, my God, Brandon Whedon is the most gifted quarterback I've ever seen. Throws the most beautiful ball. And the Cowboys were 4-12 and terrible. Why? Because they had no backup plan at quarterback. So, yeah, if he stays healthy, they're fine. But otherwise, Jenna, it's a disaster. Total disaster.
Shouldn't have gotten rid of Andy Dalton.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Back here, running the no huddle now. Talk the future of Cam Newton. Where does he land, if anywhere? Fox Bet Sportsbook has set the odds for Cam's next team. Top of the list, the Houston Texans, the favorites, at plus 450. Followed by Washington, Dallas, Indy, and then Baltimore. But Nick, what is more likely? Cam Newton plays or doesn't play this season?
Well, I'm leaning towards doesn't play, and for a number of reasons. Ooh. And that list of odds, those top 5 teams, I feel like I can just cross out 4 of them, and maybe all 5. Cam's not going to the Texans, and that's not because the Texans wouldn't take him. It's because I don't think Cam wants to sign up to be a part of what might be one of the worst football teams ever. Like, that doesn't help him. So I would cross them off. Washington and Baltimore, I talked about this yesterday, and I know people might get tired of hearing about it, but I think the vaccination status almost eliminates him from those two teams. Ron Rivera is a cancer survivor who's talked about the importance of vaccinations more than any coach maybe at all this offseason. And Baltimore, Lamar's already unvaccinated, so you really wouldn't have the insurance if Lamar misses time. So then you have Indy. Forget what Chris Ballard came out and said yesterday about vaccinations. Set that aside. What do we know about Carson Wentz? You're not really allowed to bring in competition, even if it's just as a backup. It messes with him. So that's 4 of the 5 gone. So then there is the Cowboys, who, and Broussard, I know you're high on that, and he obviously is a better option than any of their 2 backups. But I will reference what Jerry Jones said on the radio last week when he was like, listen, everyone's entitled to their own personal health decisions, but at some point we got to put the we ahead of the me, meaning if it's for the greater good. So he seems to be leaning heavily and hard into his players being vaccinated. I don't think you can just cross out the Cowboys like you can four of the other five. The one team, Broussard, that's not in the top five that I think might make sense other than Tampa, like Wilds talked about yesterday, is Seattle. There would be no quarterback controversy because Russ is obviously entrenched. Pete Carroll has brought in, you know, big personalities before, and their backup right now is Geno Smith. The problem from Cam's perspective is Russell Wilson never misses games, doesn't miss snaps, and so you really wouldn't be signing up to play most likely. But no, I think it's more likely than not that Cam is not on a team this year.
All right, Nick, as much as I think there are places that make sense, I think Seattle, that was a good suggestion by you. Obviously, I brought up Dallas earlier. Lamar, you know, backing up Lamar in Baltimore would fit. And I love Kevin Wild's suggestion yesterday about Tampa Bay. I mean, I think that makes all the sense in the world. But with all of that said, I still am with you, Nick, in that I don't think he's playing this year. Even though it makes sense, I don't think he's playing. Number one, and you brought it up, the vaccination. All right, if he didn't get vaccinated for Bill Belichick with a chance to start, why in the world, what makes us think he's going to go get vaccinated for something, some other situation? And I can't imagine why a team would bring in an unvaccinated backup. It just doesn't make sense. So I think that's a huge thing. But even if he gets vaccinated, remember, before June of 2020, when the Patriots signed Cam, there was no interest. None. And you brought up Washington with Ron Rivera and the cancer situation and how obviously that doesn't make sense with Cam being unvaccinated. But let's face it, Nick. Ron Rivera could have signed a Cam last year.
When
all this wasn't even an issue, and he has no interest. Yep. So I just think for several reasons. One, look, Cam was 15 starts, 8 touchdowns, 10 interceptions last year. All right. Yeah, two,
he wasn't good.
I don't think people are convinced that he's right, that he's willing to be a backup. Even if he says it, I think people will be skeptical. Like, well, does he really mean it? We know he still wants to play. He's still a superstar and a celebrity. So I just think all of those things combined, Jenna, are why I don't think we'll see Cam Newton. Nick, if you want to comment, I don't think we'll see him in the league next year.
Yeah, just two very small. I think where the door opens is if we're middle of the season, there's a really good team and a quarterback goes down. And let's say a quarterback goes down for 6 weeks with 9 weeks left in the year. And it's like, we're going to be in the playoffs. We want to be in the playoffs. But our quarterback situation is Cooper Rush and Will Greer, one of those things. The other element, Jenna, and this is a point you harped on this offseason about Cam, is he was supposed to be better positioned this year because he had a year in the Patriot offense. Well, that's now all gone. And so wherever he goes, he's got to pick it up with no offseason, with no training camp, with no anything. I think that works against him greatly. And so unless there is a major injury to a really good team's quarterback, then I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, not many options. Maybe Atlanta. I don't know. It's a possibility. Hey, let's head here to New York, talk some Zach Wilson. The Jets rookie quarterback was on the receiving end of some high praise from Tony Romo, who said, I actually think Zach Wilson with the Jets is going to turn that franchise around. I think Zach Wilson is going to be in the discussion as one of the top 3 to 5 quarterbacks very quickly. Within the next couple of years, I think you're going to see him rise. I think he's unbelievable. His ceiling is so high, it's rare for me to say someone has the ability to get in the stratosphere of a Mahomes. Sit down, Nick. But I think this kid actually has that ability. So when you have a quarterback like that, I think there's no telling how good you can be. Broussard, what did you make of Romo's comments?
Well, I know that everyone thinks Tony Romo can do, think, say, utter no wrong right now. They've called him a football genius since he's retired and become this great broadcaster. This reminds me of going back to 2013 when another guy that I think is incredibly intelligent about football, former quarterback Ron Jaworski. You know where I'm going, Nick. He said Colin Kaepernick was going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And we all know, of course, Kaepernick's not in the league for different reasons. But even before he began kneeling and worked his way out of the league, it was clear he wasn't going to be an all-time great quarterback. So this is just premature. And I like Zach Wilson. And so I do think he can be good. I think he's the best quarterback the Jets have drafted in a long time. However, to say top three or five, just keep Mahomes' name out of your mouth. Don't ever put a rookie who hasn't thrown an NFL pass in the same sentence as Pat Mahomes. That said, I'll give Romo this, Nick. When you realize, okay, yeah, Tom Brady's 44. He'll be retiring at some point. Aaron Rodgers is about to be 38 in December. Deshaun Watson, his future is in flux. Okay, that takes out three of the top five already. So if Zach Wilson really is good, okay, maybe he can somehow be in that discussion. But I think it's just premature, Nick.
No. Of course it's premature. Here's the thing. Zach Wilson, in order to be top three, so Mahomes is already there. So then you got to be better than everyone else in the league except for one guy, right? And who's the guy? Russell Wilson. He's still pretty young. Dak Prescott. He's young. You like Lamar. He's won an MVP. Some people love Josh Allen. If Deshaun Watson ever comes back to football and gets everything sorted out, he's been excellent throughout his career. But forget those guys. How about two AFC quarterbacks drafted in the last year and a half? Trevor Lawrence and Justin Herbert. I would be shocked if Zach Wilson is ever better than either of those two young AFC quarterbacks. And that's not a knock on him. It just Herbert was spectacular last year. And Trevor Lawrence, I believe all the hype. There's a reason that there was no discussion about the number one pick, only about the number two pick. So how are you going to be a top three quarterback in the league when I don't think you ever have a shot at being a top three quarterback in the AFC? Forget Baker, Lamar, Josh Allen. Throw them all out. Mahomes, Herbert, and Lawrence will, I believe, be better than Zach Wilson their whole careers. That's just the AFC. So I get it, Romo. Jets, AFC team, CBS, AFC, some Jets games on TV. I understand. He's doing his job. Good for him. But come on, let's pump the brakes a bit. Pump the brakes a bit on the, you know, square-jawed, great-looking Zach Wilson. Let's see him play a bit for his top three, top five. Come on. Come on, Jenna.
Nick, Zach Wilson, thicker neck. That's your thing. That's your bar. Let's head to Vegas.
Nah. Not so much. It's a concern, Jenna. It's a concern.
Not so much, Nick.
Yeah, neck size concern. Yeah,
in Vegas, sights are set high for the Raiders this season. GM Mike Mayock had this to say, quote, "We need to be a playoff team this year." Nick, is John Gruden on the hot seat this season?
I think one of the seats is hot, but I think it's probably more likely Mayock's than Gruden's. I think that Mayock has had some real disastrous moves, starting with the AB trade and some of the draft picks that in the moment were like, really, Cleveland Farrell number four? And they're like, no, trust me. It's like, oh, no, we were right. Arnett went too high. A lot of those things have been curious. But that's not to say Gruden shouldn't be on the hot seat. Here's the sneaky truth about John Gruden. Unbelievable first 5 years coaching. First 5 years coaching, he was 50-30 and 5-2 in the playoffs with the Super Bowl. In the 9 years since then, he's 64-80 and 0-2 in the playoffs. And with the Raiders, he's 19-29 as a head coach. So he hasn't done a good job, but Broussardi's got a 10-year contract. They've gotten at least a game better. They went from 4 wins to 7 wins to 8 wins. And Mark Davis is, you know, he's got all that money invested in that house that Jenna showed us. So I don't think he's, you know, excited to pay Gruden off for 7 years or 6 years he doesn't coach. So I think Gruden will be fine unless they're 3-14. But I don't know that Mike Mayock will be.
I'm with you all the way. I'm just going to add some stuff to what you said. The contract. Gruden's big personality, which is big for Vegas. If the team's not good, at least have a big face of the franchise in Vegas. So All of those things are going to, he's not on the hot seat, but he should be, as you said. Nick, he's coached 14 years in the NFL. He's made the playoffs 5 times. He's been in with the Raiders for 3 years. They have yet to have a winning record. And that's with a team that was 12-4 2 years before he got there. And I'm sorry, look, in the NFL, great coaches make a difference almost immediately. In some cases, immediately.
That's right.
Andy Reid, immediately. Sean McDermott in Buffalo. They make the playoffs in his first year for the first time in 17 years. Now they're a Super Bowl contender a few years later. So the great coaches, they come in and they change your fortunes right away. Gruden clearly has not done that. Yeah, he won the Super Bowl back in Tampa Bay with Tony Dungy's players. I'm not throwing shade because Gruden still should get credit. But his next 6 years in Tampa Bay, they didn't win a playoff game. So Gruden, he was great on ESPN with the, you know, coaches, you know, the quarterback room and all that he did. And he was a great broadcaster. But he's overrated. It's just as simple as that.
That's right.
And he should be on the hot seat, but I'm sure he's not on the hot seat.
Well, let's stay right here with tonight's big game. Who better to break it down than a former Buckeye, 2-time Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, 3-time All-American, and all-around great guy, James Laurinaitis. Good morning, James. Here to talk some college football with us. We're so excited to have
you. Good morning.
Get us ready for tonight. Help us set the table for the big game. What are you looking forward to seeing from the Buckeyes tonight?
Well, I think the easy answer is C.J. Stroud, right? New quarterback starting in Columbus. But for me, what I'm looking at is this Ohio State defense fixed? The last time they were out there against Alabama, to be quite honest, it was embarrassing as a former Buckeye to watch that. I've been a part of those before in the past, and all offseason you have to watch the film and correct it. But is this secondary ready to compete? Minnesota has one wide receiver, Chris Ottman-Bell, who's very talented. It won't be a test like in Alabama, like a Clemson, like an Oklahoma. So if there are some issues, I think there are some things to kind of look down the future of the schedule and be concerned about. Last year, they gave up the most points in program history and the most passing yards per game in program history. So definitely something that I'm looking at tonight.
James, you mentioned the 4 teams. Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Clemson. This is an unbelievable stat. College football playoffs been around for 7 years. The last 6 years, 3 of those 4 teams every single year have been in the college football playoff. But it's never been all 4 of them. There's just kind of been a rotation, right? Mm-hmm. Which of those 4 is, in your opinion, most likely to miss out on the college football playoff this year of the 4 overwhelming favorites?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Oklahoma, and I think it only has to do with the fact of Iowa State in their conference. Now, last year, Iowa State beat them in Ames. They won, and then in the Big 12 title game on the rematch, they lost by 6. So there's a belief in Iowa State, and Iowa State has 3 preseason All-Americans. I don't think that they're going to flinch when they play the Sooners. Now, do I think it will happen? No, but you're going to force me to pick one of these teams. I'm picking Oklahoma. Yeah. I think that Iowa State is a team with Matt Campbell, the way he's jobbed, Breece Hall at running back. You got Mike Rose at linebacker, Brock Purdy. They have a tight end who's extremely talented, All-American as well. I just think they have a belief and talent that if anybody was going to knock a team out, maybe it's the Cyclones beating Oklahoma once, and maybe that's enough in this playoff era.
Yeah. So follow-up then is, if we do get 3 of the 4, but there is an open spot for, you know, one of the others, and the other is one of the other 125 D1 college football teams that aren't those 4, who do you think could slide in to that extra, not extra, but that 4th playoff spot if they go 3 out of 4 again?
I think that USC out west is very intriguing. Can any Pac-12 team go undefeated? I think an undefeated Pac-12 team does get into the playoff. Oregon seems to be a popular pick, but I think Oregon is going to go to Columbus and struggle, and I don't know if that will knock them out permanently for the season. USC's games, they have Utah at home, at Notre Dame, at Arizona State. If they wipe the table and win the Pac-12 championship, I think they're in. Another team to pay attention to, Nick, is Cincinnati as well. Cincinnati with Desmond Ritter at quarterback. They have a talented secondary as well. Luke Fickle's done a tremendous job. They play 2 road games in the non-conference, at Indiana and at Notre Dame. If they're able to wipe the slate, and go undefeated. I know they're a group of five, and it's not popular to pick one of them, and not a group of five has ever been in, but they're starting the season ranked number eighth. It's not like they're starting in years past, these group of five teams, right, like UCF, unranked or way down in the 20s. The only problem there, Nick, is Cincinnati, if they do beat Indiana, and Indiana plays Iowa on Saturday, and they lose to Iowa, or then Indiana loses to Ohio State, and maybe they lose to Penn State, what is the national perception then of the Hoosiers? Will it still carry weight at the end of the year? And same with Notre Dame, right? Notre Dame loses to USC, Notre Dame loses to Cincinnati, and everyone's saying, well, it was a down year for the Irish. You can already hear the excuses building up to keep an undefeated Cincinnati out.
All right, James, so we know we're in a new era of college sports with name, image, and likeness. And you mentioned earlier the Ohio State quarterback C.J. Stroud, who they've got high hopes for, and rightly so. You know they got this other kid, Quinn Ewers, who should be a senior in college or high school, but he graduated early, went to Ohio State early so he could capitalize on name, image, and likeness. And he just signed a three-year, $1.4 million deal with a company, and he's what? Is he fourth string? You know, but he's behind Stroud, clearly. So I'm just wondering, could something like that, when a guy that's not playing is making that type of money, can that cause any dissension or jealousy or anything in the locker room? Is that something that teams and coaches are going to have to look out for?
It's not if he picks up dinners. You know, if he's a guy taking the tap for some of the other players, I think he'll be all right. It's hard, right? Because these are kids. These are 18, 19-year-olds. When you're in the NFL locker room and someone gets paid, you don't really talk about another guy's money. You give him a hard time. You say, hey, dinner's on you. Congrats on the deal. You know, all this stuff. But it's hard because there will be influences. If you're C.J. Stroud's, you know, friends, closest friends, are they saying to him, hey, man, you're the starter. Why aren't you making two mil over 3 years? This kid is even starting. Can he handle that and say, I'll be all right. You know, let this all take care of itself. I'll have my own opportunities coming forward. I have to worry about how I play on the field, and it will lead to more deals. From a business perspective, I think it's wild. Will this deal set the mark for, you know, Arch Manning coming up? You know, if Quinn Ewers, for some reason, doesn't see the field in the next 2-3 years, does a company's now go, ooh, I don't know about taking a kid who's actually never taking a snap? I really don't see dissension unless Quinn says, hey, you know what? I'm going to miss this guy's dinner because I have an appearance. Or, hey, I'm going to miss this, you know, class because I have an appearance at the sign.
Oh, that's interesting.
Maybe that's where it comes into dissension. But I honestly, guys go out there and just play football. And I think at the end of the day, you know, you got to let your play lead to more and more deals for you. And this is just the new normal in college football.
I feel like Arch is going to be okay, even if he doesn't get signed by some random company.
So.
I feel like his path is set for
him.
All right, before we let you go, James, give us a player that you are absolutely looking forward to, someone that's just going to electrify college football this season, pop off the screen. Give us a guy you're watching.
Well, it's Spencer Rattler. I mean, when you think about explosive offenses, you're saying Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, and you just look at the success they've had in the past. And when you look at last year, he had 47 passes over 20 yards, and that's with a rough start. I mean, the rough start to the season, he had 6 turnovers, I think, in 10 quarters, got benched versus Texas, came back towards the end of the year, and a lot of those passes were late. You see the dive over there for the touchdown. I think there's just naturally a built-in excitement when you watch Oklahoma on offense. It's been talked about ad nauseum about the defenses in the Big 12. I just think that sets up a perfect template for Spencer Rattler to be the most exciting football player in college football.
Yeah. And the best name in college football.
James Laurinaitis, thank you so much. Really good stuff. Again, your Buckeyes, Ohio State taking on Minnesota 7:30 Eastern tonight, only on Fox. We got the news this week. Ben Simmons wants out, reportedly telling Philly Brass he's going to skip camp if he has to. In fact, Broussard dropping this little nugget on the show yesterday. Simmons literally open to going to any other team in the league. His co-star, Joel Embiid, responded to a report on Twitter that the Sixers had to pick between Simmons and Embiid. He was fired up. Embiid tweeting, sources, trust me, bro. Stop using my name to push people's agendas. I love and hate drama. I love playing with Ben. Stats don't lie. He's an amazing player, and we all didn't get the job done. It is on me personally. I hope everyone is back because we know we're good enough to win. He continues.
That's a good tweet.
From my own experience, y'all have no idea how much this media makes up stuff for followers, and shame on you for believing them. I haven't forgotten, but 2 years ago, I got booed. People in Philly wanted me to be traded. I even shushed them. Only the real ones didn't, but I just put the work in that offseason to be better because I knew I wasn't playing up to my potential. Philly fans, you also got to be better. Here it is. There's more. Ready? For clarity, I love the criticism. I love when I'm told I can't do something. It makes me work harder to prove everything wrong. But not everyone is built like that.
Oh, no, Joel. You were so close.
He went there. He went there right at the end. We're sorry. Do you believe Joel Embiid wants Ben Simmons to stay in Philly? I'm glad I saw the same thing you all saw.
Yeah, I was going to say it's pretty clear Nick doesn't believe it. Let me go back because over the years, I've talked to people in Philadelphia about the relationship between Embiid and Simmons. And here's some of the things I've been told. Early in their careers, they both obviously came in with big expectations. They both were early stars right away. And there was jealousy and competition between the two of them as to who's going to be the man, whose team is it. So one of them, you know, was looking at the other guy like, well, I want it to be my team. Are people saying it's his team? Or I want to be the man. Are people saying he's the man? That type of thing. But from what I've been told over the last, you know, year or so, maybe 2 years, that settled down a bit and their relationship is cordial. They're not hanging out, kicking it, but they're not at each other's throats either. And the relationship with what I've been told is cordial. And so I think they could coexist from a personality standpoint. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But Joel, I think I'm going to say that to say this. I think he does mean it when he says kind things about Ben. And I think when Ben is traded, Joel will say more kind things. But I think he'll move on with the snap of a finger because he'll there's no way he doesn't look down on Ben basketball wise. After what happened in the playoffs against the Hawks, there's no way he can't be thinking Ben's got to get better. And if they make a good trade, and if they get, even if it's a CJ McCollum, I think that's a better fit with Embiid than Simmons will be. So I don't think Embiid is trying to push Ben out the door, but I think when he's gone, he'll say good things about Ben and then move on with whoever they bring in for it.
Well, listen, I think Joel really, really wants to win. We saw the emotion on his face after Kawhi's shot. We've seen how much better Joel has gotten year over year. His game's evolved. He's tried to work on his fitness. I think some of the fitness stuff with Joel is a little unfair because he's so big with kind of bad knees and kind of bad feet. He can't do a lot of the cardio you would like people to do. Man, 7'2", close to 300 pounds with tough knees. Like, he can't be running 5 miles. His body's, so he's never going to be in the peak physical shape like some people want. Exactly right, Jenna. But as is often the case with Joel, he just said a little too much. Those tweets would have been fine if he would have just stopped seven words early.
Yes.
But not everyone is built for that. Okay. Well, that's a shot. Just like at the end of the year, after the devastating loss to the Hawks, the press conference would have been fine if he didn't say, I thought the game turned when we had a dunk and we got no points out of it. It's like, okay, man. And I'll add to some of Broussard's reporting with a little of my own. I was told that comment and the comment from Doc and the comment from Joel right after that Hawks loss when it was raw was the final straw in this relationship with the Ben and the Sixers. That it wasn't the main thing. It wasn't all that their talk focused on. Right. But that after that, it was done. And so, like, the problem with that tweet, Broussard, and the end of it is, I don't really care if Joel and Ben get along because it's clear Ben wants out. It doesn't really matter if Joel wants him there when Ben clearly wants out. The problem is the whole basketball world saw it. And so now when Daryl Morey, who is not going to take 50 cents on the dollar, calls any team, that team has even more leverage. Because they're like, okay, I mean, things are getting lit on fire in your backyard. Joel Embiid is, you know, two Twitter thumbs away from further decreasing your leverage. So I think Joel played like an MVP last year. I think he is clearly the best guy on that team, like all that stuff. But he has some maturity growth to do when it comes to, I can't always say what I want to say. I can't always say what I'm thinking, especially when Joel's chances of winning a title are going to be drastically impacted by what they get back for Ben Simmons. So don't decrease your team's leverage when they're trying to make trade Ben Simmons. It's just foolish, and it's for nobody. It's for nothing. It's to be on Twitter. Like, there's no gain to it, Broussard.
There's no win.
No, look, Nick, we all need an edit button, right? You can't just spout out whatever the heck you want to say. But you mentioned Joel needing to mature, and he does. But they both do. So does Ben. And I get where Ben is coming from with what Doc Rivers said. I don't know if we can win a championship with him. And then, of course, what Embiid said. I get that he's hurt and that bothers him. These guys are supposed to have my back, and they threw me under the bus. I understand all that. But what bothers me about the stance that Ben is taking, Nick, is that this whole, he's playing the victim role, okay? And he is making it look like the Sixers are mistreating him, okay? Like, I can't believe what they're doing. And what it says to me, and they said the wrong things. But all of this, his actions since then, Nick, makes me think there is a reluctance and a refusal for him to look in the mirror. Because the fact of the matter is, even though Doc and Joel spoke out of turn, Ben has not gotten it done. And Ben was horrible in that playoff series against the Hawks. And Ben has not added a jump shot, even to take the jump shot. And so it scares me if I'm an opposing team, because I like Ben. And we've talked about it, you and I, how they can build around him somewhat like Milwaukee's done with Giannis and all that, okay? But if I'm an opposing team, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, first of all, it's been 4 years and he still hasn't gotten to the point where he'll even take jump shots. And now the way he's handling this makes me look at it like, this dude won't look in the mirror. He won't look in the mirror and say, I've got to get better. Yes, Doc spoke out of turn. Yes, Joel should not have said that. But I didn't get it done. At the end of the day, they were right. I got to be better. And Ben Simmons, I love Ben Simmons' game. But he's got to look in the mirror and start adding the things that he's lacking, Nick.
Well, and here's the other part of it when it comes to adding the things that he's lacking. In a different circumstance, Broussard, if you're not on a team with Joel, then maybe if you have the right pieces around you, the things that you are lacking don't rear their head so much, right? They don't come up so much.
Agreed.
I'll use Draymond as an example. Draymond doesn't refuse to take, well, last year he kind of did refuse to take shots, but Draymond doesn't have a refusal. It's just that aside from the 73-win season, he's never been able to take shots, right? But he's on the perfect team for his skill set, and what he does is makes them so much better, right? Particularly in the postseason in big spots. So it's not as glaring. I understand the frustration for anyone in any walk of life. If you're like, man, I'm just in the wrong place. If I was somewhere else, I'd get criticized less, I'd be loved more, all this stuff. But you are where you are, right? And so I get why he wants out of Philly now, but that doesn't absolve you for not trying to fill in the holes while you were there. Because Joel Embiid wasn't going anywhere. They were building around the both of you. And Embiid, I would argue, did adjust his game somewhat to try to make it fit better with Ben. How'd he do so? Joel Embiid is a good perimeter shooter for a big man. And he's a better than average three-point shooter for a big man. But that's not where he should be spending a ton of time. But he spent a lot of time out there because Ben needs to be close to the basket, right? And the problem is, like, you didn't see the growth on Ben's game on the offensive side like that. Now, where I'll give him credit is you saw massive growth on defense. It's like, we're going to be the best defense in basketball. I'm going to be maybe the best defensive player in basketball, and I'm going to help my team there. And he should get credit for that. But, yeah, this is a collective failure by all the parties involved that it's here, and the fact that it happened on the biggest, well, one of the biggest stages, the conference semifinals, but so glaring. We knew this was coming. I just feel like all parties involved now are making it maybe a little messier than it needs to be in the final weeks of it. And I guess that's because on Ben's side of the equation, messy is good because they want out of there as soon as possible. From the Sixers side of the equation, they would far more prefer it be a little quieter and they could do this without the ticking clock of training camp and the start of the regular season.
Right. And because Nick is so messy, Daryl Morey is obviously going to have to lower his asking price. And what I think, we know he wants draft picks and that those are like gold in the NBA, right? But I think he's got to focus on the current players. We know he wants a star back for Ben Simmons. And that's the right approach to take. I think if you have to drop the request for all these draft picks, then do it. But get a player or two that can help you right now. Because you said it earlier. Joel Embiid, as great as he is, and he probably would have been MVP last year had he not gotten hurt. As great as he is, though, his body is fragile. And how many years does he have at this elite level? He might only be one of the best 10 players in the league for another 3 years. I mean, I don't hope that's the case. But that is very possible because of his fragility physically. And so you got to get somebody in here that's going to help you now. You already have some good young players with Tyrese Maxey and a few others, Thybulle. So don't worry so much about the draft picks, but get a player or two that can help you get closer to a championship next season.
Okay, so let's stay there. Nick, yesterday you brought up something kind of interesting and turned all of our heads. You said, how about Ben Simmons for Kyrie? Right? It would work for both teams, one for one. Do you think Joel Embiid would like to play with a guy like Kyrie Irving? That makes his game easier, makes him a little happier.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, NBA players, in large part, even if they think he's, you know, a bit of an oddball, have massive respect for Kyrie's game. Like, I think Kyrie, if we were to do, like, rank the top 50 players in the NBA, and you had a media vote, and then you had a player vote. I think Kyrie, there would probably be the biggest discrepancy. I think Kyrie is a guy that guys that play against him have so much respect for what he does and understands the difficulty of it, and I don't think they care about some of the, you know, his quirkiness, if you will. And I, you know, I'll say it again, I think if you're the Nets, Ben Simmons is exactly what you need. A guy that can guard all five positions, never needs the basketball, can help you in transition. It's perfect. Like, once you got Harden, Kyrie's skill set's a little redundant. The problem is, these are not robots, and it's a relationship business more than anything. And Broussard, KD, and Kyrie, they came there together, and we have no reason to believe that relationship is soured at all. So I don't think it's going to happen because, for, you know, for a number of reasons, but the most primarily, the biggest one is Kevin Durant, I don't think, would allow it. And Kevin Durant's the most influential person in that organization by a mile, as he should be, by the way. But from a basketball perspective, I think, you know, to me, Kyrie is 90% of Dame, and I think Dame would be an amazing fit with Embiid. Their games are different, I understand, but as far as like ability and skill level, and I think he fits with Embiid perfectly, and Ben Simmons gives the Nets exactly what they need to go to another level.
Yeah, look, I love Kyrie in Philadelphia with Embiid. I mean, my goodness, inside, outside, you still have Tobias Harris, presumably Seth Curry. I mean, Yeah, Philadelphia would be, they would be a contender. They would be a legitimate championship contender far more than they are right now. But you, as you said it, I mean, Kevin Durant probably is in New York if it's not for Kyrie, all right, with the Knicks. And so I agree with you. I don't think they would do that because of Durant and their relationship. And I think those three stars in Brooklyn, they want to run. They want to give it one try. They can look at last year and say, we really didn't get it to give it a try. We played 8 games together. All right, we were never healthy. I don't think they want to break up that trio without giving it a legitimate chance to win a championship. And I like your point. I mean, Simmons there with Harden and Durant, that's monstrous. But this is where you and I disagree. Brooklyn is beyond a contender, even as they are right now.
Oh, yeah.
Without making
a
move,
contender.
They are still, I think, the favorites to win the championship. And so that's why I don't think they'll make the move.
You went too far, Nick.
Yeah. I wanted to get you riled up for the next segment, but I don't think they'll make the move.
Yeah.
But I don't hate it.
A little too far.
That's one of the smarter things you've said, Nick. One of the smarter things you've said.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, bravo,
that. It's a
Nick.
Long list of smart things I've said.
But 4 years, $147 million left on Ben Simmons' contract. This situation far from over. We will revisit. Hey, we got Coach Eric Mangini joining us this morning. Always great to have you, Coach. We are talking about the future of Cam Newton. Where does he land, if anywhere? So the Texans are the betting favorite to be Cam's next team. But, Nick, let me start with you. What do you think is actually more likely, that Cam Newton plays this season or doesn't play at all?
Oh, I think it's more likely he doesn't play at all. In fact, I think the only path for Cam Newton playing this year is if a team with legitimate playoff or Super Bowl aspirations midway through the year or later has their quarterback go down for, you know, a significant period of time, and they need someone who can come in and hold it down that isn't, as we were talking last segment, a Cooper Rush of the world in Seattle, a Geno Smith, even though I know Russ never gets hurt, never misses time. But you saw those top five teams according to the odds. I feel like there's a pretty good reason that you can almost cross out any or all of those five. Like, go through them one by one. First one's Houston. I don't think Cam or anybody that is trying to win this year wants to go play for Houston. Houston is going to be the worst team in football this year. Then you have next on, it's Washington. Ron Rivera could have signed Cam last year, didn't. And now you add that the fact that he's not vaccinated, Ron Rivera is a cancer survivor. To me, you can almost cross that one out. You have Indy on the list. Indy, they don't want to bring in competition for Carson Wentz. They made that very clear. They didn't trade for Nick Foles. They didn't go out and get Gardner Minshew. It's very important that Carson knows, no matter what, this job is his. Baltimore's quarterback is already unvaccinated. Are you going to bring in an unvaccinated backup? And then there's Dallas. Jerry Jones just last week made the strongest pro-vaccination stance he's made, where he's like, hey, everyone's entitled to make their own decisions, but sometimes you got to put the we in front of the me when it comes to the public good. So where's he going to go? And it's also, Coach, one of the reasons why when people were like, oh, Belichick did Cam a solid by cutting him because now he can go be a starter somewhere. No, he can't. There's not a team in the league that is hiring Cam Newton right now to be their starting quarterback. And I don't know that many teams are going to bring in an unvaccinated backup. So barring an injury late in the year, like we saw happen to Derek Carr 1 year, Andy Dalton 1 year, team on the precipice of the playoffs, quarterback goes down. Coach, I don't see where Cam Newton goes.
Well, I do think it's a good thing that he got released right now, because at least it puts him on the radar screen around the league, and people can start talking about whether or not he makes sense for him in some capacity. So that's a positive. His money is guaranteed, so that's positive for him too. And I really want Cam to get another opportunity. I think he's earned it. He did a great job in New England in a really difficult situation, in a place that I thought he had no chance to survive. So I'm cheering for Cam. And there's some spots that do make sense. I understand Baltimore's unvaccinated starter in Lamar Jackson, and you may not want to go that route. But from a fit standpoint, he'd be really good in
that
Baltimore.
Fits.
This is a team that had RG3 at one point. Right now, they've got Tyler Huntley, who's got no real production at all, as the backup. And he understands the things that Lamar is going through. And I think Cam's matured so much that that could be a really positive thing for Lamar. And it's a organization that's used to big personalities. From another organizational standpoint, I understand you don't want to go to Houston. But if that's the opportunity, then you go there and you make the best of it. And there's another situation where they've got a rookie quarterback with zero experience as a backup. And that could work out, maybe not ideally, but at least it gets them back in the mix. Where a spot I like is the Jets. I think the Jets could be a place that he could a good backup. They have zero experience. It's Mike White. He's played going into his fourth year, but he's got zero play time. And now he's in the division. He's got experience with New England. He's played against the other opponents and is a veteran presence for a young quarterback that could be a really positive thing.
That's interesting, Coach, because that's the first time I've heard or thought about the Jets with Cam. And here's what I say, and you know this as well as anybody. You know that New York market. And the thing I would fear with the Jets is even though, and I actually think Zach Wilson's going to be really good. I don't know if he'll do it this year, but I think over time he's going to be a good franchise quarterback. But let's say he struggles early. And you know New York, the fans may start saying, hey, he's not ready yet. We got Cam Newton. Throw in Cam Newton. And now all of a sudden you've got your young hotshot rookie embroiled in a quarterback controversy with a celebrity. A big name player in Cam Newton. So I think that would be the deterrent there. I agree with you. Baltimore, perfect. Dallas, perfect, as I said earlier. Wilds yesterday brought up Tampa Bay, which I had thinking about it. I think that'd be perfect. All right, so there are places out there. And Houston, Nick, I think the reluctance in that partnership is on Houston's side. I don't think Houston wants Cam. I think they're fine to go with Tyrod Taylor as they see what happens with Deshaun Watson. If I'm Cam, I can't worry about we're the worst team in the league. That could be his only rope. And so he'd have to go there and try to prove that he can still play in the league. All that said, I don't think he's in the league. I think the chances are better that he's a fan, that he's watching the games on the couch just like we are. And to your point, Nick, about if a team goes, a quarterback goes down late in the season or midway through the season, the problem with bringing in Cam is that his skill set is probably much different than most teams that would suffer that type of injury. A Phillip Rivers might be easier to slide in to an offense than Cam is just on the fly. So I think it's very unlikely that he gets in the league, certainly if he's not vaccinated. He's got to get vaccinated, I believe, to have a shot to get back in the league. And I just don't think teams are fully believing yet, Nick, that Cam is ready to be a backup, to be a full-fledged backup where he's not to start and take over the locker room and all of that.
Yeah. He's got to get vaccinated. He's got to be willing to be a backup, and he's got to be willing to be open-minded to go even to a rebuilding franchise. There's a lot there. Let's head to Vegas, where the sights are set high for the Raiders this season. GM Mike Mayock had this to say, we need to be a playoff team this year. Nick, is John Gruden on the hot seat this season?
Well, I think the vast majority of coaches with his resume as the Raiders coach would be on the hot seat because he has an unprecedented contract, and it's a contract for a team that is not known for paying people to not work for them. I don't know how hot his seat actually is. I think that unless it is a disastrous season, like a 3-14 season, he'll be back next year. I don't know you can say the same for Mike Mayock. Because at least with Gruden, you're like, oh, they won 4 games, then they won 7, then they won 8. You see slight progression. Mayock's taken some big swings, and they've been big misses. The AB thing was an unmitigated disaster. And I know Coach might not like this, but one of the reasons I think GMs are hesitant to go out of the norm in the first round of the draft is people miss on draft picks all the time.
But if you miss on a guy that everyone thought was going to go top 10, in the top 10, it's like, hey, we were all wrong. But if you take Cleveland Farrell 4, and everyone's like, really? I had him 24. And then it doesn't work out, that's more glaring. He's got a few picks like that. And so I think if there's going to have to be a fall guy in Oakland, if they're bad this year, it's more likely to be Arnett. Even though Gruden,
Vegas,
first 5 years of his career, 50-30, 5-2 in the playoffs, a Super Bowl, all that. The last 9 years, he's well under 500, 0-2 in the playoffs. He's 19-29 with the Raiders. It's been a long time since he was a great coach. But that 10-year contract, Coach, that gives you a lot of wiggle room. And I think that is going to probably be a saving grace.
Yeah, you're not going to feel any heat on your seat when you're sitting all that on all that cash. I mean, we're talking about $60 million in dead money. And that's a staggering amount of dead money. It's not an organization that's historically been flushed with cash either. Now, the move to Vegas has changed that, but they're not going to eat that, not after this season. Maybe they'll go to year five. This is going to go wild, and there could be a fall guy. Now, the AB miss, okay, that was a big miss, but New England missed big on him too. So it's not like they were alone in missing, and you could look at that organization and say it's really well run. So let's give them a pass on that. On some of the draft picks, I respect their willingness to take some chances on guys that they believe in them. It shows conviction, and if you miss, you deal with that. But the idea that Mayock is making these decisions in a vacuum, that's not the case. There's only one guy who controls every single move in that organization, and it's John. So if Mayock goes, it really is a fall guy. It's not the guy who's responsible for the problems that are there.
Yeah, look, for all the reasons you guys said, Gruden, I don't believe is on the hot seat. I think he should be. I really believe he should be. He's had three seasons with the Raiders, and they have yet to post a winning record. And 2 years before he got there, they were 12-4. All right, and you guys know this. In the NFL, a great coach comes in right away in many cases and changes the fortunes. Sean McDermott in Buffalo gets them to the playoffs for his first time, their first time in 17 years in his first season. We saw what Sean McVay did with the Rams. We saw what Andy Reid did in Kansas City. Coach Mangini, your first year with the Jets, you go from, they were 4-12 before you got there, 10-6 in your first year. So why are we sitting around waiting and waiting and waiting and giving Gruden these excuses? The fact is, since he won that Super Bowl in Tampa Bay with Tony Dungy's players, not taking credit from him, but that's just the fact, Gruden has not had success. In his last 6 years in Tampa after the Super Bowl, they never won a playoff game. And I just said what he's done with the Raiders, so he should be on the hot seat, Nick, but we know he's not.
In fairness, though, to John, Bill Belichick was a head coach in Cleveland for 5 years and had one winning season, and we'd all agree that he's a great head coach. And when you try to completely overhaul a team and change the culture, it's not an easy process to go through. And I think owners now are in the mindset of they want you to cook a turkey, but they want you to cook it in a microwave. So ideally, he's building the organization in a way that can compete for a championship every year. And that takes time, but year four is more time than most people get, and we should collectively see significant progress, well, especially late in the season. That's where the problems have been, is they've started out strong, and then they faded.
Off. Yeah.
I think all three seasons they've had more difficulties later than early.
That's right. Yeah, and Mark Davis wants that turkey cooked at P.F. Chang's, actually, if you read about Mark, but that's neither here nor there. I want to make this clear. I am rooting for, even though I don't like the Raiders, I'm from Kansas City, blood feud with the Raiders my whole life, I am rooting for Mike Mayock for the pure reason of, I think more sports teams across all sports should go with the method of hiring someone from television to run an organization.
I think it's brilliant.
I think it's forward thinking. I really need him to succeed for my long-term goals to come into play. But Coach, I know you hated the committee's tears. You just wrecked the committee's tears. I look at the Raiders this year.
That was tough to watch.
I think forget winning the AFC West. I think everybody believes Chiefs are going to win the AFC West. So let's just say the best they could do is second in the AFC West. I think they're more likely to finish fourth than second. I think the Chargers are better than them. And if Teddy Bridgewater stays healthy, I think the Broncos could be like, they could be looking at a last place finish in the division. And if that happens, Jenna, they're going to have to make some type of changes. And unfortunately, it's probably going to be my guy, Mike Mayock, who obviously was the right hire. And that's the exact way you should build your franchise. Take smart people from television. Let them run everything. I love that.
Okay,
idea.
You know what?
It. Can't
there
endorse
you go.
It strongly
and
enough.
We're good with that.
I'm serious.
Time now for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Ram Trucks, built to serve. Aaron Rodgers set to start what could be his last season as a Packer. But look, at least we're here. We weren't sure if Aaron Rodgers was going to be on the field at all this season, with the rumors swirling about all summer about how unhappy he was. But after restructuring his deal at the end of July, it's been a quiet camp. It's been a seemingly smooth lead up to game one. Packers GM Brian Gutekunst now on his quarterback's involvement in that final roster construction.
Did Aaron Rodgers consult with you, or did you reach out and consult with Aaron about any of the moves you made yesterday?
You know, I've had really good conversations throughout camp with Aaron and Matt, and I think the communication has been really, really good. And so as we went into this kind of decision-making period, I think, you know, everybody, all the people that are kind of involved in that were very aware of what was going on and why we were doing what we were doing. So I feel really good about that. And the conversations that I've had with Aaron have been excellent.
Nick, is there any hope the Packers can still work things out with Aaron Rodgers beyond this season, or am I getting greedy asking for more now? We got him this year.
Yeah, no, I think this is the last dance, as he and Devontae Adams put it. And I think that Aaron laid it all out so perfectly in that press conference around a month ago that I think he did a really good job of getting some of the public that was on the fence to see it from his perspective. And it clearly has not been an issue of, we can't win a championship here. They've been on the doorstep of a championship each of the last 2 years. It's not that, I'm not as good as I once was. I need more institutional support. He had arguably the second best year of his entire career this past season. It's about not just respect in the building, but respect the way it would appear many other quarterbacks, some far less accomplished than Aaron, get in their buildings. We've heard this offseason that the Arizona Cardinals consulted with Kyler Murray about moves. We heard that the Eagles, when they had Wentz, consulted with him. We have heard Sean Payton say, well, one of the losses for Drew Brees is, you know, the way he helped us with our game planning, and that he was essentially a de facto member of the coaching staff. Brady obviously had a huge hand in what they did last year in Tampa. And they're not giving him that in Green Bay, coach. And I know one could argue they shouldn't. Don't want, you know, and I know your stance has typically been, you want to be a part of those meetings, you want to be a part of those decisions, show up to those meetings. You know, players get in at 7, coaches in at 4:30. Come in, you know, have your visor on and be ready to grind tape. But regardless of whether you think it's a good idea or not, it's what he wants. And they're not going to give it to him. And so I think even if they make the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl, this is his final year in Green Bay.
Well, you typically kill Arizona and their coach and how he's done there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Philly has been the model lately in organizational efficiency, which was the other example that you cited.
It might not be the right thing, but it's what he wants.
That's my point.
Maybe it's the wrong way to do business, but it's what he wants.
A lot of people want a lot of things. I get that, but sometimes it doesn't work out for the greater good and for what's best for the team. And you saw the reaction when they asked him if he was consulting Aaron, the giant smile of like, I can't believe you asked me that question, because the answer was obviously no, he didn't consult Aaron at all. And I don't think this is an issue purely about personnel. And as much as we want to frame it about personnel, there's never been a time where Aaron said, okay, I'm going to take a little less money so we can keep those guys. I'm going to have my contract be shaved a little bit so that we can keep all these players that I desperately want to keep. This issue is about cash. It's about guaranteed money so that he knows that he will be there and not be able to get cut. Right. That's what it's about. And going into this season, he had 3 years on his contract. It wasn't a lame duck season as it's been portrayed. That wasn't the case at all. So there was no reason for Green Bay to think they had to renegotiate his contract. But he wanted big guaranteed cash. And all the other stuff, I get it. It's a nice narrative. It's just not the real narrative.
I don't think he's automatically out of there. I think there's a lot of season, obviously, to be played. And there's a lot of time for Green Bay to make this relationship right. And I do think, look, I don't think the Packers are ever going to totally kowtow to Aaron Rodgers and let him run the organization. But I do think they're going to bring him in a little bit more, at least ask him about some of the player personnel that is related to him. The receivers, the cornerbacks, whatever. What are you seeing? He's not going to make the decision, but what are you seeing, Aaron? We'll at least hear you out. All right, Gutekunst already did that. He said, we signed Randall Cobb because Aaron Rodgers wanted him, period. All right, so they're already moving in that direction. I'm not saying he's definitely staying, but I definitely don't think we can say he's out of there no matter what. Because, Nick, if they re-sign Devontae Adams next year, then why in the world you got a top 10 defense, great offensive line, great running
game.
Because
he's not about that.
Historic franchise. He said he's always said, I want to finish my career in Green Bay. But if they're improving on the front office front and they're listening to you now,
it's about respect. Because it's about respect. I don't think it's unreasonable. I mean, I am not a television executive. I'm just a guy that talks on this show. But I've been here since day one. And when we found out Brandon was leaving to pursue some of his other passions, I would have been furious if when I called and said, what are we doing? They were like, you'll know when everyone else knows. You know what they did? Well, we have some ideas, but what do you think, Nick? And I told them. I said, you'd be crazy to call anyone but Broussard. And by the way, I'm going to be proven right. They were right. Everyone was on the same page with it. But the idea that some of your most important people shouldn't be involved in your most important decisions if they've earned the right by performance or player tenure is crazy to me, Jenna. Of course he should be involved.
Coach, thanks for joining us.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.